SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. Listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. First Friday in December. I don't know what that particularly, what's particularly unique or special. But it's, you know, I'm sure for somebody, first Friday in December means something. Maybe, I don't know. It's got to be something. I'll look that up later. I'll see what I can figure out. What I'm sure the date means. It's got significance. I can tell you that it's the start of the NHC Winter Challenge. I mentioned this the other day when Kevin Kilroy was going to join us talk about his qualifying. And in fact, I just reached out to Keith Shamblin. I might have a window for Keith this hour because I really want to go through those details again. And there's a lot going on actually in that. So. And if I can't get Keith, I'll be sure to give you the details again. And of course, it's all at ntra.com/NHC. Nice weekend. We're going to set the stage, I think, for the winter and, you know, whether it's, you know, Aqueduct. And of course, we got the Cigar Mile tomorrow, plus the 2-year-olds going a route aground, the mile and the eighth, and more. Looked at Sunday too. Sunday got 3 stakes on Sunday. A couple of, you know, got the Stallion Series and the Garland of Roses, and got the Grade One Starlet out at Los Al. Steve Anderson at the end of the show today, as promised. We'll get a little visit in with Steve. In fact, the strong lineup of DRF. Correspondent guests, Mike Welch as well. Gulfstream, of course, got their second day of racing in yesterday and continue today, tomorrow, the Claiming Crown. And, you know, the Claiming Crown, really industry-wide, it has been a big success and has had a terrific history. The origins at Canterbury, right? Canterbury. And actually, they moved it, right? They moved it a couple of times. I think to Ellis. I think Ellis ran one. Did Ellis run one? I think so. But now, you know, having this home at Gulfstream with this, you know, early winter season, you know, first Saturday has really, you know, kind of become a launching point for the winter. I mean, you know, it's their starter stakes. I mean, starter allowances essentially, but they fill up. I mean, the conditions provide for pretty interesting assemblies of talent that you know, over the years, you know, it's been a pretty productive day when, you know, trying to find, you know, find a price or two. Remember that period when the crazy period where Ken Ramsey would, you know, he would gather up horses every year to have an assault on the Claiming Crown, and Luch too, right? Ron Paolucci has made a habit of putting together a lineup and coming at it too. So we'll get Mike Welch in. And there's also a couple of maiden races on that card tomorrow early. I think the first and the third tomorrow. And there's some notable, a couple of notable pedigrees. And in fact, if you recall from the summer, the last time we talked to Brian Lynch, and I'm going to turn the pages here. Here we go. The last time we talked to Brian Lynch, remember, he went through a unbelievable litany of 2-year-olds. Well, one of them that came up debuts tomorrow in that first race. This would be Caribe Bean Mocha. The Uncle Mo daughter, Ammerman Homebred, out of Coffee Click. Now, I don't know, you know, don't know if she necessarily is ready to pop at a mile. You know, it's on the grass. And I don't know if she's ready to, you know, pop first out. Lynch can certainly win with a firster. That's not the issue. She hasn't really been flashy in the morning. She's been steady. And there's a long string of works going back to the summer. But this is one of those. There were about eight or nine. And I did tweet. I'll try to dig the tweet up to get the rest of them. But you'll remember, Lynchy absolutely was raving about his two-year-olds and made a point of, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to get them all down or go back and check. There's also Grand Motion has got a Flaxman Homebred. Pangea Proxima. This is a Temple City out of Enthused, making this filly a half to Thread of Blue. And remember Ea? Ea? It's got to be almost 10 years ago. This mare's got to be getting, she's by Seeking the Gold. She's definitely getting up there in years. So a Flaxman debuter in here. And Gustavo Delgado claimed a horse by Nyquist, a filly. And it's pretty interesting that this filly was even offered up three different times for 50 and 40. But this is a Nyquist filly out of Libby McKenzie. And she, you know, she hasn't really done a lot yet. She's been down in South Florida from the start, but time sensitive. And Delgado and his team, very good off the claim. I mean, very good. So that's that first race. And there's also, since we went into this, and I don't know if I'll have time to cover this with later with Welsh. In the third race, you're looking for pedigrees. How about Chad and Seth Klarman? Voter Protection. And this is a colt by More Than Ready, Ocala Stud Bred, and was an OBS April purchase. This is a half to Musical Romance and to Forever Mo. Voter Protection stretches out after a couple of sprints, one off the turf and one on the turf at Belmont. And there's also a pretty sassy pedigree that Grand Motion has in the third, too. This is Some Mo, Uncle Mo Colt out of Professor McGonagall, and an Alex Campbell homebred that is sibling to It's Tea Time and Ultra Brat. So in addition to the Claiming Crown activities, there's also some nice maiden specials. And really, there's good maiden special action nationwide. Los Al, I mentioned yesterday with Bob Marino, Calbreds and Open Company on either side of the Starlet. Virtually everywhere you look, there's three of them at Tampa. And I should mention, I don't know if we're going to get to this, but I don't know if I'll probably get a chance to handicap. It does feel like there's a couple of pretty obvious players in the two stakes at Tampa. They're going to run the inaugural very early on the card as the third race, smallish field. And Arrest Me Red, very interesting in here for the Jacksons and Arno Delacour, coming off the win at Aqueduct in the Atlantic Beach, but is going to try the main track. That's the interesting part. Pioneer the Nile out of Maraschino Red. 5-2. Actually, Poppy's Pride, Michael Yates, who's on a three-race win streak, the Stonehenge people, 2-1 favorite, and is, you know, got a string of dirt performances. So you got to take a referendum on Arrest Me Red moving to the main track. And then in the girls' race, the Sandpiper for the two-year-olds. In here, who did I see that looked imposing? There was somebody that, at a glance, Rudy Brissett has got a Windstar Stablemate first out winner from Indiana, a Union Rags filly, Gulf Coast, But there was somebody else in here that I could have sworn caught my eye. And I'm drawing a blank. I guess Mike Campbell. Mike Campbell in with an Into Mischief filly, Feeling Mischief, 9-2. Yeah, I guess those were the two. I guess those were the two principles. So anyway, you got Tampa today, tomorrow, and the other stake action that we might not have a lot of time for, but I do want to make people aware. You've got the Maryland bred stakes, the juvenile championship stakes at Laurel. And these are fun because they bring in from different parts of the country. If there's anybody, like, for instance, Ron Moquette shows up with a Keeneland first out winner, Maxine's Tap Room, you might remember from October. And this is a Bourbon Courage that happens to be a Maryland bred. So Maxine's Tap Room, Julian Toledo is going to ride 4-1. You've got a couple of others. Tim Hills comes down from Jersey and from New York with Liam's Missy. This was a Country Life product. The Fetch 92,000 at Timonium. Tedesco Racing with Tim Hills. And you know, then there's a lot of locals. Trombetta with Eclipse and Sal Cumin, that Miss Nondescript, won the Maryland Million Lassie. Rodney Jenkins in here. How about Jerry Robb with Jerry Robb, actually, I saw Street Loot. There it is, the Street Magician. The Bowmans, by the way. Dr. and Mrs. Bowman, as well as Brooke, also Dr. Bowman. They've got a bunch of horses. I think I saw three or four, and so does Country Life, actually. You've got quite a few that are bred of this Maryland Juvenile Filly Championship, and then the boys' race. Asmussen comes in with Jackson Travelers, a horse that Toby Sheets looks after in New York. Broke the maiden at Pimlico, and then came down to Laurel and romped. 2-2. This is a Munnings colt, Jackson Traveler, 4-5 with Rosado sticking with. But I wanted to make sure. I didn't want that to slip through the cracks. So Tampa and Laurel stakes, as well as the New York, Florida, and California venues that we'll go over in a little bit more detail. Let me tell you who we're going to go over it with. I mentioned Steve Anderson and Mike Welch and Dave Grenig. Dave Grenig, probably around the top of the hour. Told you, Jay, when Jay was with us the other day, Jay on holiday for a couple of weeks, and you can wish him a happy birthday on Monday. Hammer, of course, we'll check in with Hammer, and I'm going to, I don't know, I could speculate, I guess, that we go over the Oaklawn calendar giveaway. If not this week, then next week. It's usually the first or second December show that we go into the specifics. So we'll see if Hammer wants to do that. You know, some news actually on that topic, and I'm sure we'll get to it with Steve Anderson too. The announcement came yesterday regarding Golden Gate. They're going to basically table things, let everybody get their quarantining done, and you know, given the situation, particularly in California, they're going to hiatus until Boxing Day. They won't resume racing at the Golden Gate until the 26th. If you didn't see this, not that anybody wanted to have this happen, but the reality is it's a big boost for Bob Moreno and the team at Los Al. Essentially, you know, anybody that has got horses ready to run here the next, you know, the next fortnight, they can come down to Los Al. So based on what we discussed with Moreno yesterday, it really feels like Los Al will have good field sizes and strong cards through their brief you know, little intermezzo here between Del Mar and the resumption of racing at Santa Anita on the 26th. So I'll slip that, I wanted to slip that in. Scully, we'll get to Scully in hour two. Nick Tamaro, top of hour three. So plenty of handicapping specifics with James and with Nick. And what, our actually the first guest, and he's going to join us in just a couple of minutes. Tony Alavato from the New York Racing Association. And with the last, you know, full TV production, it's not an all day affair tomorrow, but the broadcast of Cigar Mile Day, and going to wrap up, the extra large production that we've come to really enjoy. And I don't know if you saw Bob Ehalt wrote an extensive recap of the year and what it meant. And I'm going to basically, kind of touch on those highlights with Tony. And it's been a couple of years, I think, would have go back to last summer. Might have even been the summer before that, the last time we talked to Tony. But 777 hours of coverage that is going to be on Fox by the time the broadcast year is over. And it has been really important for the business, pure and simple. It's one of those scenarios where that much television coverage is just good for everybody. They forged partnerships with, one racetrack after another, depending on the, on the season and who was running, given the unusual scenario. Oaklawn, and we just finished up with this nice Churchill run. Woodbine was featured with some cross country pick five tie-ins as well, and it's just been a treat. I mean, essentially, to have what amounts to a network Saturday broadcast day after day. Particularly when there was so little other television to occupy and sports to occupy. I mean, those of us that are true believers, we're going to watch racing, pandemic or no pandemic. But, for people that were curious and just were spinning the dial looking for, something to engage them, an athletic endeavor, as Tony Black explains it. These shows were a godsend. In fact, Tony Alavato is standing by. Tony, good morning.
Steve, good morning. How are you doing today?
Excellent. And just actually a perfect intro, and I don't know how much of it you heard, but
yeah,
just saying that in looking back, I mean, this has been a success now for a couple of years, but looking back under these difficult circumstances, what was achieved was pretty remarkable.
Look, I think that, when we look back, it won't be when we look back 10 years from now, looking back now already at just what the racing industry has done, and I'll pivot to Naira and the shows in a second, but just the fact that racing was able to keep the show, when I say the show, I mean horse racing, the show went on during a time when literally no other sport was operating. And we were the only game in town. And, for decades, racing has been criticized for always playing catch-up and, just being behind eight ball. And this was one time that, and a very critical time, that the entire industry really stepped up. And whether you're talking about the people on the backstretch who, under incredible conditions, came to work every day and took care of these horses that are the lifeblood of our industry, to the racetrack operators and our TV network partners, Fox, TVG, NBC, and the players who supported horse racing in a big way during that time. It's pretty remarkable. So, you know, for us, being Naira, we were just really blessed and fortunate to have put in place a lot of things that had us ready. Not that we ever anticipated something like this would happen, but we had the ability to produce these shows. And it's a remarkable achievement by the Naira TV team with, you know, the support from Fox, that they were able to do the job day in and day out during the pandemic at a time when we weren't even racing. I remember there was, you know, we were doing the shows out of Aqueduct. The TV truck was based at Aqueduct because when the pandemic started, we were racing at Aqueduct. And we got the word that Aqueduct would be converted into a standby army hospital for the pandemic. So we literally had to move the TV trucks, which is a pretty big process, in, you know, 24 hours, and move to Belmont and get set up to do shows the next day out of Belmont. And you talked about the number of hours, and you say, you know, 700 and whatever it is, 85 hours after Saturday that we'll have done this year. That's up from 385 hours last year. So we doubled the amount of hours. And keep in mind, you know, we've worked closely with the state and safety health department to make sure that our employees had the best working conditions and the safest working conditions. So we did double the hours with probably half to 60% of the staff that we would normally have on these shows. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm the one doing the interview, but the people who did all the hard work were the talent, the producers, the directors, the camera operators. Those people really did an unbelievable job, not just for Naira, but as you mentioned, you know, before I came on, you know, for these other tracks that we were able to showcase during a time when a lot of people were watching TV looking for live sports, and we were the only game in town.
We'll go through some of the numbers, and they're amazing, particularly on a per race basis, given how much of the season we lost. And I think in retrospect, people won't even they won't believe that there was 80 days essentially that was lost in New York before Governor Cuomo, you know, kind of relented and allowed the racetracks throughout the state to, you know, to reboot. But in the meantime, you know, the activity had already, you know, was well underway on your end. Talk about the execution. And we watched, I think a lot of people watched, you know, full-sized networks struggle with the remote tie-ins, with the, you know, the patch-ins from their personnel. And that, you know, that to me was a, had to be an added element to, you know, to the intricacy of this, you know, to be patching in, you know, Gary Stevens and Jonathan and whoever was, you know, whoever was remotely stationed.
Well, yeah, and you know, look, you talk about people in the industry stepping up. You know, for the longest amount of time, we were actually doing the shows. We were hosting from Santa Anita and the XBTV studios. So Aiden Butler was kind enough to allow us to do the shows from there on days when we weren't even able to show Santa Anita because of their contractual commitments to another network. So, you know, they stepped up and did what was right for horse racing, even if they didn't directly benefit from it. They allowed us to operate from there. And then, you know, we had, you know, once we were back at Belmont and we reopened, we had Gary, you know, at his home. We had, you know, different times. We had Tom Amos in his home.
That's right.
In Louisiana. We had Jonathan Kinchin in Austin. You know, we had people all over the place and just, you know, really trying to find a way to make it work. And, you know, we've seen it with other productions, like you mentioned. It's, you know, we're not the only ones. And we were just fortunate enough to do it. And I think that, look, I think television viewers have become, were very patient during the pandemic and understanding that, you know, the level of production, there was going to be a little bit of a technical drop-off. And, you know, so, you know, we had Andy sitting on his couch and, you know, with an iPad in front of him and headphones on, and, you know, and people were forgiving. And, you know, we tried to make the shows as good as possible and make it feel like you were watching a regular show. But it was definitely a challenge.
Well, it came off beautifully. Talk a little bit about the integration, particularly, you know, with your role. I mean, you've got a handful of hats, Naira Bets, and, you know, the marketing aspects of you know, the Naira product. Talk about the integration of Naira Bets into this, because if, you know, as somebody that campaigns New York breads, it has to be stressed how valuable wagers through Naira Bets is to the purse accounts and the contribution. We got great respect for all the bricks, you know, the bricks and mortar entities are obviously, to me, the you know, the number one interest in the game. And, you know, we understand the, you know, the betting platforms that aren't necessarily tied to a racetrack, but bets through Naira Bets means a lot more to the game. I mean, let's just be frank.
Well, and look, you know, just to, you know, put it in layman's terms, I mean, obviously, you know, every dollar that's bet on a horse race, money comes out of that. Some of it goes to the winners, and then the rest of it is used to fund the industry, whether it's to pay for the racetrack operator, the purses that the horses are running from. There's money that goes there, and it's split up different ways. And you know, with Naira Bets, when you're betting, when you're in New York and you're betting on Naira Bet, you're a New York customer, you're betting online with us, it's the same as an on-track bet. So there's the highest percentage of money is going back to the industry when you're in New York and you play with Naira Bets. And, you know, it's important. And the other thing is that, you know, Naira is a not-for-profit. So, you know, we're here to ensure that horse racing not only continues but succeeds far beyond the amount of time that I'll work here, but for decades to come. And so all the decisions that we're making at the New York Racing Association are based on what is going to help us long-term with the sport and what's the right thing to do for the sport and for the horsemen. So when we started Naira Bets 4 years ago outside of New York, we were playing catch-up because, you know, there were major players on the advanced deposit wagering scene, and we played catch-up, and we were fortunate that we were able to have great partners like MSG in-state and Fox Sports out-of-state. And, you know, when you have an idea for a program and you have to have buy-in from people. So when you had people like Mike Mulvihill of Fox, who's an executive there and at the highest level, you know, Pete Macheska, who's the coordinating producer for the World Series and NFL, and they're behind what we're doing and supporting what we're doing, that, you know, that belief in what we were trying to do really allowed us to succeed, even through the growing pains of first starting off. And all along, our goal was to do what you said, and I really appreciate the compliment. It was to make people feel like they were watching a network broadcast of horse racing on a daily basis. The best compliment that we ever get is when people believe that Fox is producing the shows, not Naira. And obviously we have a lot of input from Fox, and they've helped guide us, and they do a lot to ensure that the shows are at the highest production level, but it's really a great compliment. So, you know, all that has really played into the success of Naira Bets and the ability for horse racing and horse racing in New York. You know, Finger Lakes was one of the tracks that we featured on the shows this year. So imagine Finger Lakes being on national television. What a thrill that was for them. You know, it's really allowed us to take a bad situation and make it as positive as possible from a racing standpoint and keeping the business going.
Well, the numbers, I mean, just to give a, not that people are all that concerned with the specifics, but on a per race basis, I mean, if you talk the raw dollars, it basically was, you know, $1.7 billion versus $2 billion. This is through the end of November, essentially. But on a per race basis, which is a fairly benign way to, you know, try to evaluated. I mean, the sales companies have had trouble this year trying to equate, you know, what's been accomplished versus previous years. But the reality is you're looking at essentially a looks like a 12 to 14% per race increase in handle.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really a positive thing. I mean, the betting was, you know, especially when you looked at, like, in April and May, the amount of dollars that were being bet were just unbelievable because of the lack of competition. But, you know, there was two things going on here. One was about survival and getting through a very difficult time, but also how are we positioning ourselves for the future? And I can't speak about the other advanced deposit wagering companies, but I can say that at Naira Bets, the customers that we signed up during that time, which we know for a fact were lower level customers, people that were lapsed fans or casual fans that had come over to horse racing because of the type of offer that they took, the sign up offer. You know, we had these $200, $250 offers, and these people were taking $20 offers to open an account. The people that signed up for our lowest introductory offer, 80% of them came back and redeposited with real money, in addition to the free money we gave them. And those people are still playing. And to me, that bodes well for the future of horse racing, that these people that came into our store, so to speak, and started playing, they stuck around when other sports came back. And now it's given us the opportunity to expand that market, which has been shrinking for so long. Our demographics gotten older in horse racing, and now we've got an opportunity with sports betting on the horizon to hopefully get people engaged in horse racing.
Tony Olivato with us from Naira, and talking about the season of America's Day at the Races and Saratoga Live, and one more nice size show tomorrow for Cigar Mile before everybody takes a breather. And there's a couple of things that you touched on, Tony, that I'd love you to expand. There's the debate around the industry and particularly people that watch the numbers that have said that, you know, essentially the ADWs are, you know, competing for either the same pie or a steadily shrinking pie, as opposed to trying to grow the business. And I'd love you to talk about that retention, and, you know, either, you know, customers coming back, horse players coming back to the game, but also integrating, you know, the pricing of, frankly, the you know, the takeout issue, and you know, structuring wagers that you know, players help them keep you know, their bankroll alive longer. You know, this is how we're going to, you know, gain new customers, especially in a shifting landscape that is going to have sports betting, you know, ultimately nationwide. And, you know, we're an expensive bet. And how do we, you know, how do we make that work out in the marketplace?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's, you know, obviously, you know, the brick and mortar has to be sustained. If everything shifts to online wagering, we've got to make sure that the model works and that the bricks and mortars businesses are able to function on a daily basis. And really, that varies from state to state. There's different margins and different rates that people are getting paid from state to state. And, you know, we're always looking at that and making sure that the model's correct. And I think it's going to be tweaked a little bit here in the future to ensure that, you know, we're doing what's right by racing. I think that if you look at what the ADWs have done, I mean, there's been a lot of innovation that's come out, and they're, you know, they are marketing and trying to reach out to some new fans, and they've given a platform for people. Look, where would we be if we didn't have ADW? Is one way to look at it. Where would we be if we didn't have, you know, multiple networks televising these shows? I mean, it would have really been the end of our industry. So, on one hand, we're very fortunate, but we also do have to have some caution and, you know, tread carefully as we look at the model and how the money shifts and what it means for the industry. And there's people a lot smarter than me that are paying attention to that to make sure that it's going to work. But ultimately, we have positioned ourselves, I think, so that we can be ready for what's coming in the future with sports betting. And, you know, and like you said, the important thing is always be aware of the players, because, you know, we're competing against other businesses that are other sports where, you know, there people are playing football games and it's a different takeout rate. But we all know that horse racing has the best opportunity from a gambling standpoint compared to sports betting. I always tell people, look, you could bet a football game and you're betting $110 to win 100, or you could bet on a horse race and bet $10 to win 100.
Give us a bit of a survey or preview of what, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, during the off season, a extensive evaluation of the production from all the different vantage points. But talk a little bit about what you would like to do moving forward, and what kind of elements can be introduced. What can be tweaked? How do you see the productions evolving going forward and keeping people engaged?
Well, you know, the thing about producing live television is all TV producers are in a quest to produce the perfect show, and it's unachievable. And in fact, when you think you've done the perfect show, you go back and watch it a few weeks later, a month later, and you realize, oh, I would have done this different, I'd done differently. So it's what keeps everybody in television going. And we never rest on our laurels. We know we have a long way to go. The shows can get much better. Everybody on the team, while we're very proud of our work, we want the shows to be as good as possible. And, you know, we look at our competition as other sports, not just other people televising horse racing. So when we look at what things that are being done in other sports, and if you watched Saratoga Live and America's Day at the Races, you saw some of the things that we did with the virtual lanes, so that when there was an inquiry or a horse was drifting out, you could see exactly how many paths the horse went in or out on the head-on. We incorporated a plane shooting overhead during the Runappy Travelers Day. So we're looking at everything. We're looking at drones. We're looking at whatever new technologies out there, different camera angles. We also want to be careful not to make some of these cuts too jarring so that people lose track of where the horses are. But we feel like technology is something that we want to incorporate as much as possible into the shows. We always want to be at the forefront of that from a racing standpoint. That's where Fox comes in and really helps us, because they're doing NFL, college basketball, college football, baseball on a regular basis. There are things that they're doing that they're able to bring to the table that we normally would not have access to. And so we're looking at those kinds of things for 2021. And most importantly for us, and it's kind of what, separates our shows from some of the other racing shows that are on TV, is it's all about, quality, not quantity of races on our shows. And, we like to tell stories. We want to tell the stories of the people on the backstretch. We want to really encourage ownership, because as much as there's a horse shortage in the country right now, we think there's an ownership shortage.
Mm-hmm.
And we really want part of the ownership experience to be, hey, when you come to the races, it doesn't matter if you have a $10,000 claimer or you're running in a $1 million race, there's a shot you're getting on national TV. And that just makes it a better experience. For those of us who have owned horses, and I have owned horses, and it's a roller coaster. I mean, it's great when they're running and they're winning, and when they don't run for 3 months and you're paying those bills, it's tough. And so every little thing can make a difference to that experience of owning a horse. And that's one of the things that we're really trying to capitalize. And from a horse player standpoint, we're really looking at what we can do with tournaments and how we could find a way to do tournaments on a more regular basis and get players involved and get them on the shows and let them be part of that, because it's also a very good experience for them. So those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. It's always going to be evolving. We're going to try new things. Not everything's going to work. Hopefully the shows will continue to improve. And it's really, again, it's a credit to the people who are working on these shows day in and day out, and the talent that do all these things and really have made NIRA Fox look good.
You mentioned the team of people that are behind the scenes and essentially made this happen, and all the legwork, the pre-production that then gets fed in as part of the broadcast. I got to talk about the on-air talent as well, because this is a grueling undertaking, and not to take away from anybody that does work in front of the camera from a studio set. This was a little different, and it From so many aspects, Tony, because obviously keeping track of the New York racing and handicapping the cards and, you know, doing the kind of work that, you know, that, for instance, Andy puts in and you know, to be prepared, everybody puts in. But then to have to quickly adjust and be prepared to talk about races, you know, from venues that they weren't necessarily following all that much. I mean, to dive into those Churchill cards for the last 6 weeks and immediately, you know, latch on to the storylines and everything that's happening at other circuits, it's a challenge. And from that standpoint, it you know, it was as seamless as everything else that was spilling out into the homes and computers.
Yeah, listen, you know, I will say this, and if you look at what's being done on television from a horse racing standpoint, and I'm going to include, I love our talent. I think our talent, we have the best group of announcers and analysts out there in terms of, you know, and I put them up there with any sport. But just in general, if you look at between, you know, the Fox shows, TVG, and what NBC's doing, and now that we're seeing sports betting coming around and people starting to focus some of their efforts on these pregame shows and talking on and studios and talking about sports betting, you can really see the difference in terms of how far ahead horse racing is compared to these other sports. It's literally night and day. I mean, people will watch a pregame show and get a, you know, 10-second reporter update from Kansas City, and they see it's snowing, and they go run and bet the under because they think they've got some kind of a competitive advantage because they just saw that. And instead, if you're watching the Saratoga Live or America's Day at the Races, you'll hear Maggie telling you in the paddock that she's looking at a horse who's 3-5 on the turf, and the horse doesn't have a turf hoof, and that you need to wait and bet this horse when the horse runs on the dirt. And that's the kind of stuff you can't get by looking in the racing form. And so horse racing is so far ahead. And then when you talk about people like Andy Serling, Jonathan Kinchin, and what the work that they do to really dive into the races and give you information that you need to be able to bet and not talk over the heads of our audience, that's the key. It's how do you, on a daily basis, present information to viewers. Some of them are holding a racing form in their hand. Some of them aren't. How do you present? Some of them have bet thousands of races. Some of them watch the Triple Crown. How do you present information that's not going to alienate the people like me and you, Steve, who watch racing all the time, but also give you good information and give the new fans and lapsed fans information that's entertaining and informative. And that's the challenge these guys go through on a daily basis. And I think that they do as good a job as anybody in the industry. And so that's, you know, I'm really proud of that. And they work very, very hard at that. And, you know, our crews, they're all very competitive with each other. And they have a lot of fun on the shows, but they work hard. Nobody could ever say that the people that work on these shows don't work their asses off, because they do.
Well, and it's funny that you touched on something that I was going to include as a follow-up, which is how, in your experience, and going back, you know, to your, you know, your long association with the presentation of the sport on television, how do you envision, and how has this changed in terms of being able to engage, you know, the most sophisticated players as well as, you know, you don't want to talk down to people at the same time, and you know, you don't want to, you know, couch everything by saying, or introduce everything by saying, you know, for those of you that have just started to, you know, play the game, how do you spread that around? And is in production meetings, are there assignments, Tony, as to who sort of speaks to which kind of player that you assume the demographic represents?
Well, I think that, you know, we were fortunate enough to do shows, you know, three different levels in terms of viewership. You've got the, you know, MSG, Fox Sports 2 telecasts. Then we jump up to Fox Sports 1. When we're on Fox Sports 1, we know that the amount of people watching is going to be 3 to 7 times higher. And that's, you know, you know then that you're getting more casual fans when you're on Fox Sports 1 compared to Fox Sports 2. And then when we're on broadcast Fox for the Travers and we've got over 1 million people watching, you know that a lot of those people are casual fans. So you can't just do the same show that you do on a daily basis. But having said that, to your point, you know, when I watch the Masters, they're not explaining to me what a 7-iron is. So at some point, I've got to kind of figure out a little bit about the sport as well. So you've got to walk that fine line. And, like, it's not that hard for someone to say, Into Mischief, who's the father of this horse, instead of Into Mischief, who's the sire of this horse. Hmm. Like, you can dumb it down a little bit without agitating the hardcore players. And, you know, you look at something like, I think Tom Amos is a person who really does a terrific job on our shows, and you talk about someone who has to work hard because, you know, he's at the barn, you know, at 4:30 in the morning, and then he's doing these shows for us in the afternoon. But he's a person who's really done a great job of being able to explain what, you know, we see from a horse standpoint and what it means and how it translates to other sports. You know, Richie Migliori's done that very well as well. So, you know, I think that our team is always aware of that, and we push hard for that. There's times where we can fall into a little bit of a trap where we start getting into the inside baseball, as they like to refer to it, you know, lingo, where, you know, it starts going over people's heads. And, you know, our producers are great at reminding them when that happens, and just getting them to take a step back and make sure that, you know, they're not talking over the heads of the viewers.
No, I appreciate it. I also am curious along those same lines, given, you know, what 2+ decades, in and around television production. How has the presentation of the sport changed? How has it improved? What still do you think, retain as a blue sky project to fold in?
Well, you know, look, I basically, the first show I ever worked in horse racing, I was still in college. It was in 1988. I did the Santa Anita Derby. It was won by Winning Colors for ABC Sports as part of the old Wide World of Sports telecast. And you know, the first few years I worked in TV, I was Jim McKay's researcher on horse racing. And, you know, at ABC, we did a lot. We really focused a lot on the storytelling. And, you know, so that's kind of was my background and what I learned. And then when we started TVG in 1999, I was executive producer there. We did a lot of that, and we had to, you know, shift our gears a little bit more towards the betting side to sustain the business and, put on 7 days a week of programming, which TVG still does, and it's remarkable. I mean, they're producing two different networks. You know, and it's just, I think the sport has evolved. You know, technology's helped. I mean, back in the day when we were doing these shows at ABC Sports, you know, for every horse, you had to literally on the graphic side type in the name of the horse, the jockey's name, the owner's name, the trainer. You had to manually update the odds, and, you know, you could never have done a TVG or the types of shows we're doing back then, because none of that was automated. You would have spent endless amount of time just building these graphics. So technology has changed what we've done tremendously. And I think from a talent standpoint, you know, the talent there's more accessible data than there was in the past, and which is great. It's also made it level the playing field from a handicapping standpoint, in my opinion. And so there's more information that's out there, so it's helped the talent be able to give out real good information that they're able to present. So I think if you look back at the shows that, you know, throughout the different points in my career that I worked on, I'm proud of all of the programming that I've been involved with. And look, I even worked at the NFL Network and worked with professional football players and did shows there. And again, I put our talent up against any of the people that I've worked with in the past, and the team that we have are as professional and working on giving as good information as anybody is in any sport. So I think, you know, in the future, the pie in the sky, I think we really want to make the shows as interactive as possible, and make people, I think we want people to feel like if you're watching Saratoga Live or you're watching America's Day at the Races, you have an edge. You have an advantage over the person that's not watching. And that's kind of the goal that we want. We want people, you know, our talent, we want them to make the people who are watching feel smart because they're watching. We want, you know, and back in the day when at some point we'll all be able to still go to work and work side by side with our colleagues, that, you know, that water cooler talk where people would sit around and talk about the weekend, we want people to be able to talk about horse racing and be able to feel like they learned something and they're able to convey that to the people that they're with. And I think that's kind of where we're trying to go, especially with this new audience that's going to be coming around with sports betting.
Tony Alavato with us from Naira Bets and New York Racing Association. And Tony, I would certainly be happy to give you the floor to, you know, to go through, you know, everybody in the truck and so forth. But I do want to let you take a moment or two to thank the sponsors that were involved, because the industry, you know, got involved, and to make this thing work, you needed the support of a whole bunch of various entities around the game.
Yeah, look, it started with Claiborne when we, you know, they were literally the first sponsor on the show. And at that point, the show was just an idea. It wasn't even a reality. It was on paper. And they stepped up in a big way to support the shows. And they always have been there for us and given us a lot of encouragement. Ron Happy, obviously, you could not have watched the shows and not seen how big of a show it was. And then, of course, the Jockey Club, who literally have done a great job.
Well, another element of this that friend and listener Leslie Knopf brings up a great point, Tony, about the way in which the show is presented and interacts, and that is the, you know, the real time interaction that the team has when they have the opportunity to respond to questions and real time things that are happening on Twitter, which is pretty remarkable. When there's things about odds and about delays and about performances, and you know, it is amazing when you see, you know, Andy or Maggie and everybody literally answer questions while they're on the air.
Absolutely, I mean they're always on top of that and trying to keep people informed.
Well, Tony, it's just a real tribute to the association, and you mentioned Mike Mulvihill earlier, what Fox has done, and you know, let's be honest too, you really came into the breach for them, filling, you know, when they suddenly found themselves with huge swaths of airtime to fill, and so this was. You know, this was a remarkable, I must have said it on a daily basis for months. I mean, just the way things happened during this, you know, very difficult set of circumstances, you know, the industry-wide, the response has been remarkable. And what, you know, you and everybody involved here was responsible for is a real tribute. So thank you from horse players and stakeholders and fans.
Hey, listen, thanks to all the team at NYRA and at Fox for everything they've done. And, Steve, thanks to you for a great year and everything you do to support horse racing. Really appreciate your enthusiasm for the game and how much you put into it. And it really needs to be said. So thanks for everything, and let's have a great 2021.
Well, best wishes for thank you, and best wishes for family and everybody in the truck that has to put up with Mitch and any number of live wires and straight from central casting characters. It's got to be a lot of fun, and when we get to come back to the racetrack on a regular basis, you know, being able to interact with everybody on set, Saratoga next summer, certainly looking ahead. Tony Alavato, yep. Well done. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care, Steve. Bye-bye.
Tony Alavato, everybody, and Tony with almost, well, actually it is three decades. I said 20 plus. It's more like 30 years, and from the early days, as he explained to me while he was still in college. Seems like a lot of people that do the production work started that way, right? They started as interns and you know, assistants and production assistants, so forth, and research types. I was looking forward to that. Tony Alivato, everybody. Let's take a break here. And Dave Grenick is at Belmont. Given that the weather is supposed to turn rotten downstate, a lot of workers. And so we'll get the latest on several topics from Dave Grenick, DRF Grenick. Also coming up, let's see, James Scully for some handicapping. Hammer, Nick Tamaro, Mike Welch, Steve Anderson. Weekend preview at the races back after this, hour two.